Now we are living post-Easter. Easter we celebrate Jesus having been raised from the dead, and we're going to be looking over the course of these weeks at some of the eyewitness accounts of the resurrection of Jesus. And today we're going to read the first of these in John chapter 20, printed for you on the sheet. We'll read that and then have a think about that. Early on the first day of the week, while it was still dark, Mary Magdalene went to the tomb and saw that the stone had been removed from the entrance. So she came running to Simon Peter and the other disciple, the one Jesus loved, and said, "They've taken the Lord out of the tomb and we don't know where they have put him." So Peter and the other disciple started for the tomb. Both were running, but the other disciple outran Peter and reached the tomb first. He bent over and looked in at the strips of linen lying there, but didn't go in. And then Simon Peter came along behind him and went straight into the tomb. He saw the strips of linen lying there, as well as the cloth that had been wrapped around Jesus' head. The cloth was still lying in its place, separate from the linen. Finally, the other disciples who had reached the tomb first, he also went inside. He saw and believed. They still didn't understand from Scripture that Jesus had to rise from the dead. Then the disciples went back to where they were staying. Now, Mary stood outside the tomb crying, and as she wept, she bent over to look into the tomb and saw two angels in white seated where Jesus' body had been, one at the head and the other at the foot. They asked her, "Woman, why are you crying?" "They've taken my Lord away," she said, "and I don't know where they've put him." At this she turned round and saw Jesus standing there, but she didn't realize that it was Jesus. He asked her, "Woman, why are you crying? Who is it you are looking for?" Thinking he was the gardener, she said, "Sir, if you have carried him away, tell me where you've put him and I'll get him." Jesus said to her, "Mary." She turned towards him and cried out in Aramaic, "Rabboni," which means teacher. Jesus said, "Do not hold on to me, for I've not yet ascended to the Father. Go instead to my brothers and tell them I'm ascending to my Father and your Father, to my God and your God." Mary Magdalene went to the disciples with the news, "I have seen the Lord." And she told them that he had said these things to her. Now, this lady, Mary Magdalene, is the first of the witnesses who testified to the fact that they actually saw Jesus. Last Tuesday, what we were kind of looking at was the big picture of why it is that we're able to come to this astonishing conclusion that this Jesus is actually raised from the dead. This man who was crucified, who died, who was buried in the tomb, came back to life. I mean, who in their right mind believes that sort of stuff? Because dead people do not come back to life. When they're dead, they're dead, they're dead. Full stop. That's just the end of the road, the end of the story. Nothing else happens. So how on earth do we come to the conclusion and conviction that this Jesus was raised from the dead? And part of that we saw was the amount of eyewitness accounts that there are. Any number of different individuals, all of whom testify that they have seen the Lord and are prepared to go even to their death for the truth of that conviction that they have indeed seen with their own eyes that Jesus risen from the dead, alive before their very eyes, and they bear witness to the fact that they have seen him alive. So I thought today we would do it slightly differently, just so that you get the idea of this. These are eyewitness accounts, and you, therefore, you this afternoon, you really are going to be asked to play the role of the jury. That's where witnesses have to play out their testimony. They're brought into court and a jury has to listen to their testimony as they are examined and they're cross-examined by the different advocates. They come into court and they put in the box, and this today is the box. So behind the box you've got me, but you've got to understand this is not me, this is Mary. Okay, so when I'm standing here, I'm Mary, and when I'm standing over here, I'm the advocate. And you have to understand, advocates are kind of like Jeremy Kyle. Anyone watch Jeremy Kyle on the television? I was going to say it's nothing to be ashamed of, but it probably is something to be ashamed of watching Jeremy Kyle on the television. But he would make a brilliant advocate because, I mean, he would just go for the jugular. He asks all the leading questions and he knows exactly what to put. And so that's the kind of advocate who's not just going to accept this lady who says, yeah, I saw Jesus. He's going to quiz her just a little bit. And that's how we're going to build up a picture. We're going to see that actually here is a credible witness. So behind here, Mary, this is the witness box in which the witness is placed and where they're stuck until the judge kind of says, you are free to go now. No one's got any more questions. When I'm over here, I'm asking the questions. Okay, so that's how we're at. And the reason for that is because as the jury, you have to make up your mind. You have to come to a conclusion. You have to reach a verdict about what the witnesses are saying. And here's witness number one that comes into the box. Okay, so you better start off by telling us who you are. My name is Mary. Yeah, okay, you're called Mary, but there's about a million and one Marys. It's a very popular name, we know that. Are there any other distinguishing features about your name? You're Mary, but kind of Mary who? Well, I'm called, by and large, I'm called Mary Magdalene. That generally is the name that I go by, and the reason why I'm called Mary Magdalene is because I come from a town called Magdala. Am I right in thinking that Magdala, the town Magdala from which you on your own confession come, am I right in thinking that Magdala is way up in the north of the country by the Sea of Galilee? Is that correct? That it's a long way from here where we are in Jerusalem and you come from up north in Galilee? Yes, I come from the town of Magdala. It's just a small town on the west side of the Sea of Galilee, which is, as you say, up in the north country, rather than down here in the south in Jerusalem. Thank you very much, Miss Magdalene. Am I right in thinking as well that Magdala, this town from which you come, has a reputation for prostitution? I don't know what the town has a reputation for outside. All I know is that whatever the reputation is of a town, it doesn't mean that everyone who lives in the town is guilty of what that town is reputed to be known for. And if you are inferring that I am a prostitute, then you need to come clean about that. I wasn't inferring anything. I was simply trying to establish where it is you're coming from, trying to establish your credibility. I am right in thinking, though, Miss Magdalene, that you do have something of what we might call a slightly shady background. That is correct, sir. I do have what is called a shady background, I suppose. I was possessed by seven demons and was delivered from that. So you have a background in which you have suffered from demonic possession. Is that correct? We're clear in thinking and understanding that before we actually hear what you have to say. You have a dodgy background. You've been possessed by demons, and not just one or two, but you've been heavily possessed by demons in the past. That is correct, but it is in the past, sir. I have been delivered from those demons. I have been clearly, definitely, and for now a long period of time, delivered from those demons. So although that was my background, it is no longer who I am or what I am. I am a new person, and I have for this past while lived an entirely new life. So, bearing all that in mind, that that's your background, you're from up north there, would you like to tell us, Ms. Magdalene, what actually happened on the day in question? Certainly, I'll happily tell you what happened on the day in question. I made my way to the tomb, and I was going there. Would you like to tell us exactly when this was that you were going to the tomb? It was, certainly. I'll happily tell you. It was very early in the morning while the sun was still just prior to sunrise. The sun was beginning to rise just early in the morning. So I'm right in thinking that it was dark at that particular time of day, and the sun was barely up. Is that correct? That's correct. It was just around the time of sunrise, the kind of gloom that there is just before the sun has risen. It was that sort of dark, not pitch dark, but just slightly dark like that. So I would be right in inferring, let's just get this clear before we begin to go on about what you're talking about. You went to a tomb at that time in the morning, and you are from up north, you're not familiar with Jerusalem because you don't live here. You come from a town that's a long, long way away. You're just a visitor to Jerusalem. You are upset, clearly upset because of what's happened, and we're sympathetic to you in that. And it's early in the morning, it's dark, and how can you be sure you've gone to the right tomb when you go to this particular tomb? I'm very glad you asked that question, Jerry. I'm very glad you asked that question. Because we were very clear about the tomb in which he was buried. We recognize that this Jesus, whom we've loved, we've followed, we've given a lot of our time, a lot of our energy to following, we were appalled when he was crucified, and then taken down from that cross. And the thing above all else that we wanted to do was to anoint his body, to give him proper burial rites and so on like that. And because it was too late on the day in which he was crucified to do that, we were very careful to take note of exactly where this tomb was. We went with the owner of the tomb and were directed to the right tomb. We saw where they buried the body. We saw the tomb in which he was put. And we made a very clear, definite note so that we would be able to remember exactly where it was when we came back on that morning. So we were quite clear it was indeed that particular tomb. So would you like to tell us, Ms. Magdalene, again, why it is that you were going at such an unearthly hour of the morning when most people in their right minds aren't even out their beds? Why are you going at that hour in the morning to this particular tomb? The reason, as I explained earlier, if you'd been listening, Jeremy, was that the reason was we were going there to anoint the body of Jesus. And it was to give him the due burial rites. And so, Ms. Magdalene, you are clear in your own mind that he did actually die. It may just have been, but might it not, that he didn't actually die, that he perhaps just collapsed from fatigue, from the beatings that he'd had, from the pain of crucifixion. Are you clear in your own mind that he did actually die and was buried as a dead man, or maybe just brought there and laid there just to be conveniently out of the way so that people could get on with their business? I'm very clear in my own mind that he was dead. I saw him crucified. I saw him nailed there. I saw him having to labor, to breathe, and to make himself able to carry on. And I saw the way in which at length he simply failed. His breath failed. His final words spoken like that. And I watched as the Roman soldiers, who knew all about dead bodies and who knew when a body was alive and when it was dead and were well trained to ensure that people were dead when they were meant to be dead, and the way in which normally they would break the legs of someone who was crucified to ensure that they could not breathe, they wouldn't be able to push themselves up. They didn't do that with Jesus. They stuck a spear in his side, and out of his side came the blood and the water combined, and this guy died. There's no doubt two ways about that. He was a limp, dead body, a dead weight when they carried him away like that. I have no doubt at all that he was indeed dead when they buried him in the tomb, and it was to anoint his body that we went there. So when you went there to the tomb in the morning, Miss Magdalene, early in the morning, and you're clear in your own mind that both he died and it was the right tomb, what did you find when you got to the tomb then? Would you like to explain that to us? I'll happily explain to you what I found, because it wasn't exactly what I was expecting. When I got to the tomb, I found that the stone had been rolled away from the tomb. That really just took me by surprise, because we'd expected that the stone would be there. And one of the problems that we had as we were going was we weren't entirely sure what we were going to do with the stone, how we were going to get the stone away so it would be able to go into the tomb and anoint the body of the tomb. And as I say, the stone was rolled away. So, Ms. Magdalene, you are inferring from the fact that the stone had been rolled away from the tomb, you are jumping from that to the conclusion that Jesus was risen from the dead. That seems to me to be an extraordinary jump for you to make, to say, well, the stone was moved away and so Jesus is risen from the dead. That's logically not really going to hold much water. No, you misunderstand me. That's not what I'm saying at all. It certainly is not what I concluded. That wasn't the conclusion that I made. The conclusion that I made when I got to the tomb and I saw the stone rolled away was simply that someone must have taken the body away. As I looked into the tomb and just saw that it was empty and the stone rolled away, all that I concluded was that someone had taken the body away, but I couldn't for the life of me think who it was, who it might have been, who it could have been, and who would have wanted to do so. So when you saw that the tomb was empty and the stone was rolled away and you're thinking to yourself, well, someone must have taken the body, what did you then do? Well, the first thing that I did was to run off to speak to my friends, to try and see if they could kind of help out solve this problem, where the body of our beloved leader had gone. And so I ran off and I told Simon and John, and they came running back with me to the tomb, and they arrived at the tomb and they were seeing what I was seeing. So you are saying that when you got back with these other people now, basically that's all that they saw as well. They just saw that the stone was rolled away and the tomb itself was still just empty. Well, yes, that's true, that's what they did see, but at the same time, they did see something else. And what they saw was, they took a closer look. I'd only kind of looked in just and could see that it was empty. What they did was they actually went into the tomb and they saw that it not only was empty, but the cloths in which the body had been wrapped were still there. And they were still there in a very strange way. It was as if the body had simply come right out of them. The body, the bit of the cloth that wrapped around the main torso was where it was. The torso had been, and the bit that was around the head was there where the head had been, neatly folded up like that. Very bizarre indeed. That's what they found when they went there. And we were left asking the question, why would anyone take the body? And if they did take the body, why would they not take it with the cloths wrapped around? Why would they leave the cloths in the tomb like that? It is, though, Ms. Magdalene, you will recognize, it is still a big, big jump of logic to move from recognizing there's an empty tomb and a stone rolled away and cloths that have been wrapped around the body still lying there in the tomb. It's a big jump from that to saying that Jesus is risen. Would you not agree? Of course I'd agree. It's a huge big jump, and it's not a jump that I was making at all. As I stood there outside the tomb, trying to put all the bits together, I was just trying to think this all through and trying to think it through, crying my eyes out because not only had I lost my best friend, not only had he been crucified, not only had he been buried like that, now I couldn't even find the body. I was just distraught in that sort of way. And as I kind of looked blearily into the tomb there, I saw these two angels that hadn't been there before, two angels in the tomb. So, Miss Magdalene, now we recognize your background. You have had this demon possession in the past, and you have had a kind of mixed up background in your life, and you are clearly upset. You're looking into a tomb. It's early in the morning. You've been traumatized. You're facing a situation, and now you're talking about angels. How on earth are you able to recognize an angel? I've never seen an angel. I'm not sure I would recognize them. How do you know they were angels? Well, I can't prove to you that they were angels or not, but I suppose, like you, I have an idea of what an angel might be like if I ever saw one. And hey, these individuals were like angels. They spoke like angels. They sounded like angels. They looked like angels. So far as I could gauge, it seemed to me that they were angels. And whatever else they were, they certainly seemed to be there with a very definite purpose. And what they did was they simply asked me a question. They said to me, "Why are you crying?" And I told them. I told them that someone must have taken the body, and I don't know where they put him. Sorry, I'm over here. Okay. So, Ms. Magdalene, don't you think that that probably is the best explanation? That someone simply took the body? And yeah, you don't know where they took him, and I don't know where they took him, but it kind of fits the facts, does it not, that someone must just have taken the body? Isn't that the most logical conclusion? Yes and no at the same time. In some ways, yes, it would seem to be the most logical conclusion. It was the conclusion that I automatically jumped to, but at the same time, it didn't actually, and it doesn't make any sense to me. For these reasons. Number one, who would have taken the body? Who had any reason to take the body out of there? Who would have the motivation to do that? Who would have the ability to do that? So who would have done it? Secondly, I can't figure out how they'd have done it. Who's going to have shifted the stone? Who's going to have been able to move the stone, get past the guards, get this body out, unwrap the cloths and so on and so forth? How on earth did they do it? Thirdly, I can't understand why they would do it. His friends aren't going to do that. They're not going to do that with a view to kind of perpetuating a lie. His enemies certainly don't want to do that. And even if they did, my fourth question is, where's the body? I mean, if there's a body of Jesus kind of lying around somewhere dead, if it's not here, it must be somewhere else. Where is it? There are a whole load of questions that I have in terms of that explanation that someone simply took the body out of the tomb. So what makes you conclude, therefore, that however inadequate that explanation may be, what makes you conclude that the real explanation is that he's risen? Well, I'm very glad that you asked that question, because that gives me the opportunity to tell you exactly why I came to that conclusion. And the reason is simply because as I was standing there, facing into the tomb and hearing these angels asking the question and saying, they've taken the body and I don't know where they put him, I became conscious of a presence behind me. You know how sometimes you just get conscious of there being someone else around, even although you can't actually see, you're just aware of a presence, and I became aware of a presence behind me. And so I turned round and I saw this individual whom I presumed was the gardener, because we were in a garden there like that. I presumed it was the gardener, although in fact it actually was Jesus. You don't think it was the gardener? Does that not kind of seem fairly reasonable that in the garden you'd find a gardener? If you thought he was the gardener, looked like a gardener and sounded like a gardener and so on, don't you think that that's the reason that maybe it just was the gardener? Very valid point, I suppose, but I'm very clear that it was Jesus. And the reason why I am clear is simply this. First of all, the question that he asked me. He asked me not just exactly what the angels had asked me, why are you crying? But he added a supplementary question, who are you looking for? It was as if he was kind of reading my mind in the way that the angels themselves hadn't been able to read my mind. He knew exactly. You know, sometimes when you're speaking with someone, it's just like they kind of know everything about you, know what's going on in your mind and your heart. And it was like whoever this was, he just knew exactly what was going on in my heart. He knew that it was a person that I was after. Who are you looking for? So the question that he asked me reminded me of the way in which Jesus asked those questions always in the time that I knew him. Secondly, his voice. His voice was like no one else's voice. You'd recognize that voice. And the moment he opened his mouth, we sometimes call him the Word, just because when he speaks, you kind of know that it's him. There's no one who speaks like him, and loads of other people will say that as well. So there was his question, there was his voice, and then he simply said my name. He said simply Mary. And the way he said Mary, no one else says my name quite like that. I just knew he knew my name. I mean, the gardener wouldn't know my name because, as you know, I come from up country and I don't belong here at all. But this person knew my name. And he spoke my name in the way that only Jesus ever spoke. I just knew he had spoken to me, and I just clung to him. So you don't think you were maybe hallucinating, that somehow it was kind of wishful thinking on your part, that you really wanted it to be Jesus, and therefore you kind of thought, yeah, this is Jesus, and you don't think, you know, your mind maybe has been plagued with demons playing with your mind again? No, not at all. I have been delivered from the demons. I wasn't expecting to see Jesus, and I was able to see him. I was able to hear him. I was able to touch him. I was able to smell him. I was able with all my senses to meet Jesus. And I will tell you that that I have seen Jesus. And So because my time in the dock is up now and it's time to round off, let me ask you a question. Let me ask you, the jury, a question. What other explanation are you able to give for these realities to which I bear witness? He was crucified. He did die. He was buried. He was put in the tomb. A stone was rolled in the front of it. And when I and others went along on that that Sunday morning, early in the morning, to anoint that body, not expecting him to be anything other than dead, buried in that tomb and lying there forever and a day, we found the stone was rolled away, the tomb was empty, the cloth was lying there, and when I turned around, I hear him speaking to me, and I hear his voice speaking my name, and I am able to hold him, I am able to see him, I am able to touch him, I am able to hear him, I am able to smell him, and I am telling you, I have seen the Lord. Now, how are you going to explain that? And what keeps you from yourself coming to that conclusion, embracing that conviction, and yourself gladly enjoying his presence, his lordship in your life as the one who is alive, risen from the dead, able to bring the delivering power of God into your life as well? May God enable us to answer that question, to respond to that question. You're the jury. You are required before God to make a verdict. And you are required to make a verdict on something that God himself sets before you as his word, his truth, when he says, "This, my son, Jesus, is risen from the dead. He is alive. He is the Lord." And that testimony of God himself is borne out by the witness of individuals such as Mary. Good enough for me, my legal background. I had to say, Lord, kind of looks like it doesn't usually happen, but hey, this is good news. And some 40 plus years ago, I started trusting this Jesus, following him on the basis that he is risen, he is alive, and he is the Lord. And in 40 plus years, I don't look like that, but 40 plus years, not once have I ever come across anything that argues the contrary. May God